Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. I've got an exciting show for you right now. My good buddy, Ivor Cummins from across the pond. He and I recently discussed the World Economic Forum and who is really pulling the strings with the Great Reset Agenda, with the UN, with the EU, the global elite, the central planners, the authoritarians. And you guys know that I've done a lot of deep dives on this, but Ivor has taken it to the next level. That's for sure. So I wanted to have him come on the show and go over all of the discoveries and the insider intel that he has made through his years of researching this topic. So on that note, Ivor, I'll send it over to you, buddy. I know you're going to pull up a chart and a matrix and kind of walk us through it.
Yeah, thanks, George. I'm privileged to be here and delighted to meet you at that conference. It was fantastic. And I've yet to release the interview we did in the next couple of days. But I've got to kind of tip the hat to Dr. Jakob Nordengård in Sweden. And it's www.pharosmedia.se. And that's where you can get his book, Rockefeller Controlling the Game. So I leveraged a lot of his PhD from 2012. He has a big fat book packed with references. And the beauty is the listeners often will hear stuff that's kind of speculative. And it may be true. It's possible it's not true. But the beauty of what we'll talk about, it's all fully published in the Rockefeller Archives, the UN Archives. It's 100%, not a frisson of speculative or made-up stuff at all. And the story really briefly starts mainly in the 50s with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. They brought in Kissinger, and then they had the Harvard Review, the Trilateral Commission, Council Foreign Relations, and they basically just saw it as the richest family in America and deeply connected to the American kind of State Department, etc. They simply saw themselves as internationalists whose duty it was to create a new world order, in their own words, in all of its aspects, you know, spiritual, political, social, etc. So that they actually believe that it is their duty for the world. And they also quote, and I quote, said that they wanted to make possible the basic purposes of humanity. So these guys, they're serious, and there's 70 years this train's coming down the track through the creation of all the organizations I mentioned, the Club of Rome, which is an ultra-rich elites kind of climate catastrophe propaganda group. They're still going since 71, I think. And it's basically a corporate superstructure that's grown over three quarters of a century. And that's why when we see all the insane stuff happening in the world, and a layperson would say, but how can all this be connected? Who could possibly orchestrate this? Right. And what they're missing is the key thing. It's a corporate, highly efficient superstructure with all of the movers and shakers are all involved. They're all in the Council of Foreign Relations. They're all in the Bilderberg. They're all in the Trilateral Commission. It's just perfect corporate organization over a long period has delivered the nonsense that we now we see breaking on our shores.
Ivor, how did you come to this topic in the first place? I forgot to mention at the front, but you've got an incredible YouTube channel. Feel free to go ahead and plug that. I think Josh put the link in the chat. But what brought this to your attention? I'm sure that you haven't been, you know, thinking about this stuff your entire life. So can you walk us through your red pill journey, if you will?
Yeah, sure, George. So very briefly, I'm around 25 years in corporate, full corporate, you know, establishment, as a kind of master problem solver. You know, I lead teams of 50, 60 or more engineers around the world for my corporate up until 2018. And it's complex problem solving. So multi-factor root cause problems, physics, chemistry, all branches of science. So that's what I did for 20 years. I was born to do it. And then I had also spent around 10 years directly in people management while still doing that role. So quite unusual, even in the world of engineering, which is supposedly the problem-solving profession. There's only a very small percentage of engineers who do that kind of role. But then around 10 years ago, I got very poor blood test results, and I quickly grilled the doctor. Two key questions. What are the implications of these far out kind of numbers? And what can I do? What is the cause? What can I change? And the results or the answers were so weak, I went to another doctor, a family friend, much more senior, same outcome. And then I went to a teaching professor of medicine, multiply published, who I also was connected to, similar story. So then I said, okay, there's something huge missing in the world of medicine. I don't know what it is. I have a biochemical engineering degree, but I'm not sure what this is. And I hit the ResearchGate and PubMed, published papers, last 100 years. It took me 3 weeks to crack it because you just have to follow a very careful path and keep going to the right place. People who just go out and look at all the science, they just get lost. And it was insulin resistance, which is the biggest pathological problem in the modern population by a factor of 20. It's type 2 diabetes, essentially. And I just switched my diet because I knew that carbohydrate was causing the problem from my research. I switched my diet to meat, fish, and eggs. And around 9 weeks later, I had lost 35 pounds. All my bloods were perfect, and I cracked it. And then I got involved in the health world. So that I already had the advantage of 10 years speaking against statins, pharmaceuticals that are useless, seeing the massive corporate corruption that was in bed with the kind of nutrition colleges and medical colleges, processed food industry, pharma. And I knew the whole thing was a scam. So when COVID came along.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then along comes March of 2020, right?
So in March of 2020, I was kind of looking at this thing and I thought it was like a swine flu rerun. Like the swine flu nonsense that was completely collapsed by the world's media as the nonsense that it was. So I thought, you know, they're going to get a run out of it for a few weeks and then it'll just collapse because it's patently ridiculous. I mean, I saw the Diamond Princess cruise ship. I did a quick mental calculation and it put this COVID thing in the envelope of a severe flu. Right. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. And I knew that in March 2020, I told my wife when she was going to get masks, I explained to her, she's first class honors engineer too. So it took me 2 minutes to explain to her Diamond Princess. And I said, maybe my 85-year-old mother might be affected, but I knew her blood work and I knew she had no immune deficiency and she was very low insulin resistance. So I said, she probably won't be affected at all. Correct on that as well. 4 years later, she... nothing. And that was it. But I got involved. And for April, I was simply treating it as a real phenomenon. And I was treating the reason they were propagandizing was stupidity. And then people began to send me links to, you know, the Common Pass mid-2009, Rockefeller Institute with Microsoft were developing a global vaccine pass. And I said, uh-oh. And then people brought to my attention the World Economic Forum. I'd never heard of them. And I said, uh-oh. And by May, June, I knew with the mandatory masks in Europe, when the hospitals were empty, a seasonal virus that was gone until the following October, November, with certainty, nothing was happening. And next minute, the whole of Europe had to have mandatory masks with prison sentences and fines for non-compliance. Mm-hmm. And that is absolute proof that the scam is coming down from the top. Because how could any stupid idiot even think to do that? The reason clearly was they had a big kind of doldrums in the summer. Nothing was happening. And they knew it would be very hard to get all the kind of sheep people back on the game come October, November, when they had a bit of hospital action. And they realized we got a problem. And some really smart person in their network said, what if we put masks on all of them? That'll continue a feeling of pandemia.
Right.
And it worked. It worked.
Right. And keep it on the forefront of their mind.
Exactly.
Just remind them constantly over and over and over again. And this just buys us time to get to where the curve will go back up. And we can get them indoors and controlling them more.
Clear as crystal.
Yeah. All right. So that's when you started researching the whole Great Reset agenda, excuse me, the World Economic Forum, the global elite, the central planners, as I call them, authoritarians. So why don't we go over to, and I'm going to go look at my screen so I can see this incredible matrix that you used when you and I met last. And this was just fantastic because it's one thing to sit here and talk about it, but I'm a very visual learner. So when I see a visual like this, it really helps me connect the dots. So Ivor, why don't you just walk us through this?
Right, for sure, George. Well, actually, and again, I'm not blowing here, but I quickly threw this together after talking to the conference organizer, the conference we were at. We won't go into details, obviously, but I just had this idea in a two-hour conversation with him about what I might speak about. And I ended up very busy, and I ended up doing this kind of on the Sunday before I took the flight to Dubai. And I did it quite quickly just to help illustrate. But yeah, it seems to resonate. So I just, it occurred to me that a lot of lay people and even somewhat awake people, they see all this stuff happening and they're willing to believe COVID was corruption. And they're willing to say the war on farmers is invalid and it's something political and it's not right. But when you add in all the other things going on, they're not willing to accept that they're all connected and integrated together. And right. I thought, well, if I do this diagram, I'll just explain how they are. And it's self-evident to someone who's been looking at this for the last couple of years. And I would do the same. And my corporate senior buddies at high levels who are also engineering background all 100% agree with this. And they just see it immediately. But it's hard for the layperson. So COVID-19 program we'll start with, this is a form of root cause diagram we use in complex problem solving. And it's exactly for what you mentioned, George. It's okay. So people can visualize all of the different causes in a multi-factor, multi-causal problem and see how they all interact. So I just ported it across for this. So COVID-19 program, through mass formation, established psychology, which they of course know.
That's what the MF stands for, Ivor?
Mass formation, yeah. Okay, Professor T.S. Desmet, fantastic work. He filled in gaps for me, just like Nordengard. But mass formation, you just keep going 24/7 and telling people something, and you get a mass formation going where people stop thinking after a couple of weeks, and they just, their brain just says, this is the big thing. My society, my tribe, this is the big thing. And after a while, they just don't ask questions. You got them. So lockstep authoritarianism, which people would never normally accept, through mass formation of COVID and Save Granny and biggest pandemic since Spanish flu, which was nonsense, you get them in to accept lockstep. And that, of course, weakens society in a very dangerous way. And that delivers or goes towards the globalist utopia, which they want, which is kind of social credit, Chinese style system. But also the COVID program, it delivers a lot more. There's a transfer of power. So in March 2020, the CEO of YouTube, I nearly fell out of my seat. She said, anyone who contradicts the WHO, which is a totally captured organization of Big Pharma, WEFUN, anyone who contradicts them will be taken down from YouTube.
Mm.
So, wow. So you're transferring power to the biosecurity state, the WHO, etc. And that obviously is a huge help towards their ultimate goals, Agenda 2030. But there's more, because partner profiteering is another huge side benefit of COVID. The mass manufacturers, hundreds of billions to their corporate partners like Pfizer and the rest. And then because all the corporates, especially pharma and the big banks and big box stores and Amazon, they're all funding partners of the World Economic Forum. So you let them wet their beak and bring in enormous revenues. And then they, in turn, will fund the WEF more. So it's just so synergistic. It bolsters your alliances with all of the big corporates and big tech. It's almost a thing of beauty, only it's so sick, but it is amazing. And COVID also made censorship great again.
Yeah, well said.
I just thought of that there, but censorship apparatus was accepted because Granny was dying, right? People were struggling for breath and they were showing it 24/7. So people accepted censorship. And that's the biggest strike against a healthy society you can ever do is censorship. So again, it feeds the beast. So COVID was a huge one. And it was also a kind of a trigger event. For 20, 30 years, the World Economic Forum had 4,000 global leaders go through its Young Leaders Program. And they were all kind of indoctrinated that there could be a pandemic, there could be a major loss of trust. And they were trained. And when the pandemic came along, like Pavlov's dogs, they all would have just, you know, said, oh, this is what we talked about. This is from all the whiteboarding and sessions. So people need to realize they've been well prepared for decades with all of these young global leader sessions. So this is how you do it. This is corporate. So that's kind of COVID. But then gender and trans,
pick one next. Thing too, Ivor, I want to point out before you move on is each one of these inputs that have so many different, let's say, components of them, all lead to a weakening of society, which then feeds into their ability to create this globalist utopia.
Yeah, absolutely, George. And that's a great reminder, because I put weakened society, not by accident, in red, because it's the worst possible thing for us. It's the best and most important thing for them. So you see, weakened society comes up everywhere. Because that's the ultimate goal, because the ultimate enabler is to weaken society. You can do all the other stuff, get your laws in, get your censorship in, blah, 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 blah. But weakening society enables every goal and every strategy, of course. Mm-hmm. So gender and trans, people think, come on, what's that got to do with like biotech and pharma and COVID nonsense? Well, it erodes fundamental truths and weakens society. And that's really what it's for. Weaken the family unit, weaken traditions, and weaken certainties. Societies need certainties, up, down, black, white, male, female. They're part of what ties society together is the bedrock of certainties. And they've actually gone after male, female, which was very clever. Very clever. And it leads towards the goals. It won't deliver them in its own right, but it's hugely synergistic and supportive. Mm.
Yeah, one thing also, too, and I'd like to get your opinion on this. I always saw the whole gender trans thing through the Malthusian lens. I know you and I discussed the whole, you know, why I call them the Malthusian cult. I call them the Marxist Malthusian eugenicist cult. I'm sure you could probably appreciate that. But I'm like, look, if I wanted fewer people on the planet Earth, I'm just going to convince everyone, every guy that they're a girl and every girl they're a guy. And, you know, if you can convince them of that, guess what? You're going to have a lot fewer babies. And so I don't know. What do you think about that?
Absolutely agree. And again, I did this pretty quickly and I've had huge feedback on Twitter to add things in. And absolutely, George, that's one that wasn't mentioned. It's going to have to go in. I'm going to be doing a new rev because it's like that's not the main maybe thrust, but it's a huge side benefit, just like partner profiteering is a huge side benefit of COVID, but it's not the main reason. But it's like the guys are there like with caviar and champagne with the whiteboard thinking stuff like that. Wow, this is going to help with depopulation too. Wow,
win-win. This is wow, bonus.
Bonus time. And the Pritzkers, I think, one of them is a governor and I forget where. But I mean, there's articles out now, clear as crystal. The trans movement is funded by multi-billionaires. I mean, and of course, the bequeathing the wetting of the beaks, the whole medical surgical industry is going to make an absolute killing. So like COVID, everyone who's anyone in this horrific kind of strategy is wetting their beak and benefiting. So it's really perfect for them. And if you take climate and CO2, I mean, I said when COVID began to wane and they began to give up and they realized there was a lot of pushback and awareness and they couldn't keep going forever, they backed off. But of course, they went straight to climate and all the newspapers and all the media were suddenly exploding about climate, because that's just another strategy. And there you've got wealth transfer, of course, you've got centralized energy control, and you got partner profiteering and all the windmills and all the solar panels. And, you know, the beak wetting that's going on is just comical, and carbon credits. So it's got massive benefits. And of course, it massively weakens society.
And one thing I want to point out there that you and I discussed is it's the holy grail as far as problems for them, because it's something that's going to happen in 100 years. You got to trust me on this one, Ivor. You got to give me all the power, all the control, all the money. Because if you don't, human life on Earth is going to be eradicated in 100 years. So there's no way that you can measure it right now. There's no way you can quantify it. There's no way that you can even tell that we're making any progress. You just got to trust me. And it's like the war on drugs. It's like the war on terror. They specifically choose these things that are totally abstract and unquantifiable, and to where you can't measure success or failure, because the only solution for infinity is to just give me more power and control.
The only solution is collectivism and, you know, and an ant farm with 15-minute cities, eating bugs, and an electric car that if you say one thing against the government, hey, guess what? Your line's cut. And of course, they are smart. Now, I think awareness is growing. And that's why the theme at Davos this year was mistrust and a failing of trust in institutions. But the RAND military industrial complex, RAND Corporation, 2006, did a big exercise with the World Economic Forum. And they highlighted as crucial potential pandemics and also a problem of misinformation and trust. And that was 2006. So these guys knew what was coming when they rolled out their nonsense. But I think they're finding it a little difficult now to deal with it. And they're rushing in censorship, hate speech laws, and throwing everything at the wall to head off the growth of awareness. So it's really getting interesting. But just one quick thing, George, as well. Climate disaster was identified in the 1950s, whiteboarded by Rockefeller Brothers Fund at the start of this whole thing. Okay. So there was no scientist there, not one, but it was identified as a very great opportunity for a global issue that's exactly as you describe, can't really be measured, it's going to happen way down the road, but it was perfect for them. Perfect. And
also remember when the Club of Rome mentioned that in their book that came out in, I believe, 91 or 92, it wasn't The Limit to Growth, but it was in another book that came out, let's just call it 20 years later. And I remember you had a specific quote from them, because I use this actually in a video where they say that basically climate change is the perfect kind of boogeyman for us to achieve our objectives.
Yeah, they actually, exactly, it was in the 90s. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they literally said in their own book that they were seeking an enemy that could unite. Now, they don't mean unite. They mean, obviously, that they could propagandize and fool the ant people to get behind it. But they actually said, when looking for a common enemy, right, they said this, and climate change and climate disaster could fit the bill. That's their words, could fit the bill. In other words, hey, we can use this one. Nothing to do with it being real. Right. And then they said in the next paragraph, they said, when considering this and looking at this, blah, 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 that humanity itself was now the enemy. That's our story, that you little ants are now the enemy.
Hey guys, I want to invite each and every one of you to join me May 31st through June 2nd in Orlando for Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the annual conference I do, and this year it's going to be absolutely incredible. We're going to have some of your favorites there as speakers, guys like Jeff Snyder, Mike Green, The Real Estate, Kenny McElroy. We're going to have Robert Barnes. They're talking about freedom and liberty. Even Rich Cooper is going to be there discussing red pill issues. This event is all about giving you the intel, the insider information you need to not only survive 2024, but thrive. The whole reason I created this event was to give you the tools you need to build the future you deserve for yourself and your family. This is an event you are not going to want to miss. So to get more information, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. You can see a full list of speakers we've had in the past. You can see clips from past events. And most importantly, you can get your tickets. As we get closer to the event, the tickets go up in price. So you're going to want to get those ASAP at rebelcapitalistlive.com. And we will see you in Orlando, May 31st through June 2nd.
And we're going to have to protect you from yourselves, all of us rich guys with Rockefeller and Kissinger. So it's just comical, self-evident fraud, just comical. And their book was the first global revolution, I think. And it's all in black and red. And it looks straight out of 30s Germany or Soviet. Well, black and red colors.
On that note, Ivor, one of the things or the conclusions that I've come to is I try to put myself in their position as hard as that may be. And I'm like, okay, if I'm Klaus or if I'm these guys, what would I do just starting from scratch if I'm whiteboarding it? And I'm like, I wouldn't reinvent the wheel. I would just go back to Stalin. And I'd just go back to Goebbels, however you pronounce his name. And I would say, okay, well, what did these guys do that worked really, really well? Okay, well, I'm going to take this from Stalin. I'm going to take this from 1930s Germany and propaganda, and I'm just going to make it new for the modern age. And I'm going to implement the exact same strategies. Why would you do anything different? So I think if we want to see where they're going or the strategies that they're going to use in the future, we just have to look at history, and that'll be our guide.
Yeah. And you know what, George? That is precisely right. I happen to be, just personally, for around 15 or 20 years, a World War II buff. And I think that was another huge advantage I had. I've watched thousands of hours of documentaries. I've also been very interested in psychology in my people management job. And I think I was just very lucky on that front as well, because this stuff is an open book. They are absolutely leveraging the best methods of the past few hundred years. Yeah. And they also have a fleet of psychologists at their calling. So basically Sage, the COVID kind of propaganda team in the UK, and I think it was similar around the world, nearly half of their whole team for managing COVID were psychologists. And it was all around the psychology of controlling the people. So, yeah, they've got all the I's dotted, T's crossed. They're following history, what worked, what didn't work. And they reckon with a technocracy and with corporate methods, they'll succeed where Stalin and Hitler failed.
Especially when you combine AI. That's another thing that resonates constantly when you read their blog posts, even going back quite a few years. So in my view, they're going to try to combine this with a CBDC. And let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and assume they have good intentions. But yet they're socialists, Marxist. They're like, okay, well, Marxism didn't work because we didn't have price signals. Well, problem solved. We'll just have a CBDC and we'll connect every single transaction in real time to AI. And the artificial intelligence will tell us how to allocate resources more efficiently than a price signal. And plus, again, bonus, we get all the power and control so we can control the little ants or the ant people is how you refer to it. I just call it the average Joe and Jane.
Yeah, well, that came from my daughter, actually. In the summer of 2020, I had my darkest 2 days, and I really almost felt like giving up. And that was because they pulled in the mandatory masks, and it worked. And I had predicted everything they were going to do over the years, but that one was genius, and I did not predict it. And I was quite down for a couple of days because I realized that is so smart, the mask nonsense. But my daughter, when we were talking about it, I explained what they were doing, and she's a very smart girl. And she just stopped for a moment and shook her head. And I said, what? And she said, they want an ant farm.
Right.
And I just laughed, and I never forgot it, because that's exactly it. It's not mass depopulation and mass murder, because as you absolutely correctly said, just make people not want to have kids and do some other stuff in that arena and create an environment where no one really wants to have kids anymore, because they're like battery ends. And you get your depopulation in a few generations. They're not in a panic for it, because they know it's nonsense that the earth can't support like 7 or 8 billion people. It's just complete nonsense. So they just want to get the numbers down, have a nice ant farm, and sit and lord over it. Because lording over animals is no good to these sociopaths. They want huge money, but when they get massive money and control, they then want to subjugate their own species. They're not going to be satisfied with subjugating animals. It has to be their own species. That was another
insight. Or it's not enough of a challenge, right?
Yeah, it's not enough of a challenge. And they won't feel good about themselves unless they're lording over their fellow man. Yeah. So that's another huge driver they have, to feel power. You need to be lording it over your own species, fellow man. And that's another thing that drives them. Unfortunately, that's the way they are.
Yeah, I always say that they have an insatiable lust for power. You know, when you were talking about ant farm, it makes me wonder if they also want animal farm, as in the book from Orwell.
Yeah, absolutely. What, two legs good, four legs bad, all that stuff. All animals are equal. And then added,
but some are a little more equal than others.
I mean, exactly. It's always the same. Always.
Exactly. All right. I know, Ivor, I know you're on a bit of a time crunch. Josh, let's go back to the Matrix and let Ivor finish this just fantastic visual.
Excellent. Well, I go really fast now because I think people now have got the flavor of it. So yeah. Financial CBDC, I think you'd probably agree. I'm not sure, we didn't talk about it in Dubai, but one of the big goals for COVID was to get the universal global digital ID, which would enable CBDC, which is a huge play of control, as you described. And CBDC is just unbelievable. You centralize financial control. You have a massive censorship apparatus. So we saw Trudeau, with existing kind of systems, shut down the truckers' protest. Yeah. Imagine CBDC, the power. I mean, you'd be at China level of power over your citizens. And that weakens society like get out and walk. I mean, just literally takes away the agency of society. And then mass migration, sometimes people are confused. They say, yeah, but why would mass migration? They don't know about the 1926 Pan-European Union. A group of very wealthy guys got together, including Count Kalergi, and they documented that the only way they get a European super state, which they wanted, globalist thing, was you can't have nationalistic, different cultures, different kind of histories, peoples in all the countries of Europe. You had to somehow make them into one bland blob with no diversity and culture that would resist a super state. And they got the perfect idea: flood the zone. You flood the zone of each country with very different looking, very different culture people who ideally would not integrate. I mean, if they come in, they're just white people, they look the same, and they integrate, that's not really that useful. So you need to go much further afield and bring in very different people and flood the zone. And then you'll break up the nationalism and the sovereignty in the individual nations. And More recently, Peter Sutherland, who shamefully is an Irish guy, was head of Goldman Sachs, and then he walked into the UN in a senior position, and he gave a landmark lecture, I think 2009 or 10. He's dead now, thankfully. But he gave a lecture where he effectively said this without quite saying it. He said, we need to destroy nationalism and sovereignty in the European nations if we want to move forward with the European project. So that's what the mass migration is all about. And then the war on farmers, they need to create dependency. If you have individual countries with healthy food locally produced and you try and squeeze them by cutting off energy supplies and creating fake crises, they're kind of still resilient and they've got their own local food. So they can kind of tell you to F off. Right. But if you replace local food and healthy farming of real food with a pipeline of corporate internationally shipped junk food, you weaken them physiologically, which weakens them mentally, and you make them dependent on your pipeline. So that's the primary thing for the war on farmers, using the excuse of nitrogen or CO2 or some other made-up nonsense. And, of course, partner profiteering. Bill Gates now has bought a ton of farmland, and he's making fake meat and fake breast milk. And they're intending there'll be a ton of profit as well to wet the beak of all their corporate partners. And the anti-meat propaganda is a 100-year-old thing, but now they're really deploying it. Because if you have a population, and this sounds a little bit of a stretch, but believe me, it's true. If you in the morning only had meat, fish, and eggs as a food, magically, within a few weeks, hypertension and the hypertension drugs market, which is enormous, would collapse. The statin market would collapse, and people would be feeling slimmer, stronger, more mental acuity, and a lot more resistance. You can be damn sure of it. So that's what this whole axis is about. Weaken society physiologically, mentally, and make them dependent on your corporate junk food.
How do we fight back?
I always say at Amsterdam, last few summers, we've had a freedom conference, and there's ones in Sweden too. But I always say, for me, I view it simply. It's a two-hander. On the one hand, you create awareness of this, because that will collapse it if we get enough awareness. And the guideline for that is never, ever pass on a kind of steamy story about what you saw on Facebook. Only quote kind of mainstream media when they do cover something like lockdowns were nonsense, and only cover stuff that's published, like I've discussed, or Nordengird. It's all published. It's a fact, and you can assure people of that, and you can show them the sources. So stick to sources you can completely stand over, published, and raise awareness. And the second hander is live it. So live what we oppose. That means using cash in as much as possible, buying from local providers, farmers, whatever you can do there as much as possible. Minimize your purchases and interactions with the big WEF member corporates. I know it's difficult. You need a good smartphone. Okay. But in general, minimize, you know, have physical gold, meet locally, physically with people.
Yeah.
Make an extra effort. Build your community. Meet people real life. And just pull yourself away from this internet nonsense. And do all those things. So that's kind of my view on it.
And also realize that there's a lot of room for optimism.
Mm.
I know we can talk about this stuff and it just feels daunting. And it you almost tend to have like a defeatist type of, I'm not saying you personally, but you know, the viewer and I totally get it. I mean, you said you were there for a couple of days. I know I've been there a couple of times as well, but you gave an example the other day about how the citizens of Ireland are really pushing back and quite frankly, moving the needle. And so I'd love for you to quickly maybe share that story. And then also I'd love to get your view on the guy quitting today.
Yeah. Leo Varadkar. Okay. Real quick. the things in Ireland, the big things have been, well, loads of stuff, but I'm going to keep it quick as we wrap up. So the hate speech law is terrifying and unbelievable. They even wrote it. The wording breaches our constitution all through it. And basically, they wanted to bring in the law that if you had in your possession anything that could be deemed hateful, which they did not define at all, really, a low-level court for a single kind of policeman could enter your house and take everything you have, electronic and written, and anyone in the house at the time, likewise. And if anything in there breached their non-defined hatefulness, like, which is 10 groups now, it used to be like maybe Jewish or racial group. Now it's got 3 sex groups now, transgender, this, and it's just insane. That's their list of nonsense. And basically, you are guilty until proven innocent. They've literally turned the law upside down. You have to prove to the court that you would not in the future have shared this. And they wrote it. And it went through the Irish Parliament and all the puppeticians. It's a new word, puppeteers. That's a great word.
I actually got to write that down and steal it from you.
Yeah. Well, I just saw it on some of the Facebook or Twitter tonight. I said, that's a perfect. Puppeteers, they all, well, 20 of them now did read the actual wording and they voted against it. But it passed through and then the Irish people rose. A lot of activity on Twitter. Musk, Schellenberger began to talk about it. And then they did not put it through the Senate because they were afraid. So that was a big win. And it's now on ice for a year. That's good.
Fantastic. And,
yeah, no, that's huge. And that just shows, you're absolutely right, George. It's all to play for. The second one was they had a referendum. And it was basically, I won't go through the wording because of time, but it was basically to take out all the protections of women raising families.
That's right. That's right.
In the Constitution. And the wording, if it was written last week, it'd be still spot on. Trust me on that. But they said it was outdated and they wanted to bring in a load of stuff, including trans and including certain clauses that opened the door that economic migrants could then legally vie to have all their family brought in as well. Whereas the current Constitution, that would be a problem. So it was screaming globalist and NGO fraud, screaming. And luckily, the Irish voted the biggest no vote in the history of referenda, 2-1 against, and vastly more in many areas. So the people threw it back in their face, even though, George, all the main media, all the politicians, all the parties, all the NGOs were campaigning for a month or two for a yes vote. And it was 2-1 thrown back. That was huge.
And that's and that's just basically the Irish people giving them the middle finger. I mean, quite literally.
Yeah, absolutely. And it may be connected to Leo Varadkar leaving. But remember, around 10 years ago, I'm not sure, I didn't follow politics much. I was into World War II and history, but not modern politics. It was nonsense to me. But I always remember being surprised. How can a gay guy in his 30s suddenly appear out of nowhere and be the prime minister of the country?
Yeah.
It just seemed very odd. Well, we know now he's a young global leader. So a lot of phone calls were made. Doors were opened. I'm sure doors were closed on other people. And there he was. But he has been an absolute treason against Ireland. He's a silver spoon guy. His father, I believe, has massive property in India. Big, big wealth. And he went and did medicine, never practiced, went straight into politics, rapidly into the WEF, and then he's prime minister. So go figure.
Right.
They're speculating why he left. I'm not sure. Maybe there's something embarrassing that's going to turn up, or maybe the WEF have kind of said, you've done a great job with your treason, and we've got new plans for you. And maybe he said, best to leave now before things get messy. We're not sure.
Put you in charge of the UN now.
Something like that. So you could hurt millions of people even more efficiently in the coming decade.
Yeah. Ivor, fantastic conversation, buddy. Can you tell people where to find you on YouTube or any of your social media?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, actually, if you search engine Ivor Cummins, you'll quickly still, amazingly. Yeah, I mean, if you search engine, even the G search engine, you'll get my YouTube pretty quickly and my Twitter. And YouTube and Twitter is mainly where I play. Bit of Facebook, bit of LinkedIn. I'm back on LinkedIn, amazingly. And yeah, that's about it. And tomorrow morning, actually, just a quick one. I've been given permission by the producers of a new Climate, the movie, and it's releasing 9 a.m. tomorrow, UK time or GMT, and I'm putting it on my YouTube, and it is fantastic. 4 a.m.
Eastern time, I think.
Yeah, it would be roughly 4 a.m. or possibly
4 or 5
a.m. because I think there's a four-hour difference now with daylight saving. But either way, it's going to go out everywhere, and it has all my climate heroes in it, professors of, you know, atmospheric science. These guys are fantastic, and they're all called, of course, deniers, but they don't deny. They don't deny. They say there is climate change, but hold on a minute, here's the numbers. But the movie is superb. It's around 70 minutes, and I watched it twice. I watched it the second time with my wife, so that's one to watch out for tomorrow.
Absolutely. All right, buddy, enjoy that beef Wellington with your family.
Yeah. Thank you, George. Delighted to be on the show. And sure, we'll circle back later when there's more developments.
Absolutely. We'll definitely do it again soon.
Thank you.